when you look at this game as a whole, Paul, sloppiness is one term that comes to mind. 11 penalties and 3 turnovers. You know, this was not a matter of whether or not the Giants could move the football, Paul. They had over 450 total yards of offense, but it was a matter of every time you made progress and you moved the football down the field, you shot yourselves in the foot, whether it be a mishap, a turnover, or a penalty.
You know, the game had so many ebbs and flows to it. I mean, every time you thought somebody was going to make a play, the other team made a play, and then vice versa. And I swear to you, folks, I really thought the last team with the ball was going
to
win. The way the game was going. And then, of course,
Eli
gets the ball with a little over a minute to go. So I'm saying, okay, look, they need the field goal. There's no reason why this won't happen. And then, of course, the interception there by Cravens. To me, and it sounds so sour, and I understand that to anybody out there who's watching, but the 11 penalties and the three turnovers – they gave the game away. I'm sorry. I can't characterize it any other way. They tried to give away the Saints game. The difference was, even with the 3 lost fumbles, they didn't give the Saints game away because they only had, was it 3 or 4 penalties?
It was 4 penalties.
4
in that game.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the difference. Okay? They made that game because of their 3 lost fumbles a lot closer than it should have been. And as a result, they had a squeak past New Orleans. Well, guess what? If you're going to have a ton of penalties, you're going to put yourself in trouble. If you're going to have a ton of turnovers, you're going to put yourself in trouble. If you have a ton of both, you are in big trouble. And they found that out yesterday. They could not overcome the combination of the turnovers and the penalties against a team they should have beat by 2 scores.
Hard to overcome, though, certainly. What I will add, though, Paul, the biggest difference to me, though, as you compared the Saints game, the other thing that didn't work out in their favor in yesterday's contest is Redskins got in scoring position much more often than the Saints did. The
Yes.
Saints weren't even getting in field goal position in that game a week ago. And then on top of that, the big plays. Mm-hmm. Saints only had 2 passing plays for 20 yards or more. The Redskins yesterday, Paul, had 8 plays for 20 yards or more. That included a few on special teams, the Crowder 50-yard punt return. They also had a Chris Thompson kickoff return for 25 yards.
The
and
screen.
You go down the list. Crowder for the touchdown.
Ridiculous.
DeSean Jackson had 2 plays, one that led to a touchdown. So that came into the focus in the Redskins contest, which was not apparent in the Cowboys game as well as the Saints contest.
Well, let me address at least a couple of these big plays. I thought the ball that Jackson caught in the end zone should have been overturned. I do think that one replay was totally inconclusive. The other one I thought was rather conclusive. I thought you clearly saw the ball take a bounce and a hop off the ground. So to me, I still don't understand how they allowed that Redskins touchdown. Be that as it may, maybe they would have scored on the next play. So I'm not really going to harp on that one too much. But here's what I will say. There's no question that the strength of the Giants' defense over the first 2 wins came from stellar play in the secondary and very strong play up front, especially against the run. Now, what did we see yesterday? We saw Apple go out of the game in the second quarter because of a hamstring. We saw DRC go out of the game in the third quarter because of a groin. Well, Trevin Wade had to come in and play cornerback. Trevin Wade is a good enough NFL player that he belongs on a roster, and he should be a backup. We saw him last year be a starter during a time when the Giants gave up a lot of big plays and had a lot of trouble. So been there, done that. Should it surprise you when you're dropping off from Apple to DRC to Leon Hall, who, by the way, had the most action he's had since he signed with the Giants coming off of back surgery? Should it be any surprise when you lose DRC and Apple, and going into the game, you don't have Darian Thompson, that all of a sudden, big plays would be happening? Should that be any surprise? No, because 3 of your top 5 defensive backs unavailable in the fourth quarter of that game. So I look at that. Bob Pop asked me this morning, what Giant team do they have? Are they the team from the first 2 weeks, or are they the team from yesterday? And I said, well, Bob, guess what? They're not the team from the first 2 weeks, not because necessarily they're worse, but because they've got 3 significant injuries in the secondary, which may carry over into the Minnesota game, and who knows if they're going to be beyond that. So it's not the same guys. That's a problem.
Well, but that goes back to the narrative that we talked about last season, Paul, which is the depth chart and every team has to deal with injuries. Now, you don't want to get hit.
Redskins did well overcome theirs.
And there's the thing that I was going to point out. Washington, you're down Bashaud Breeland, one of your top corners. You're down your top safety.
Well, Breeland's not very good anyway, but
he
starts.
Listen, the jury's still out there, but the bottom line is he's one of their top two starting corners,
yeah,
at least on paper. You lose him, you lose D'Angelo Hall, and you lose two starting offensive
But
linemen.
See, the Giants did move the ball on them at will, as you just said.
Yeah.
So they did show that their reserves could not stop the Giants. And by the way, their starter, Josh Norman, could not stop Odell Beckham Jr. As I said all week, he would not be able to do, and he did not. Okay, let's make that very clear. Who won that matchup? Yeah, the Redskins won the game. Norman didn't shut him down.
Well,
please.
Beckham had a respectable number, but I'll say this. He did keep him out of the end zone, Paul. And in the big picture of things, you know, that's an accomplishment considering.
How many plays did they run for him in the end zone? How many plays did they run for Odell in the red zone, period?
But I think if you're any top corner in this league, if you keep your opposite wide receiver out of the end zone, that's mission accomplished to a certain degree.
Well,
since that's the ultimate goal.
Josh Norman had allowed two pass completions against him over the first 2 weeks. Yesterday, Odell beat him six times for 100-plus yards.
Had 11 targets, Beckham, seven catches.
And one of them was against another guy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a win. I don't think that's a win at all. I don't think Josh Norman proved anything yesterday other than he's a pretty good laugher, chuckler, and giggler. That's about all he proved to me. And that he could take a cheap shot at Sterling Shepard, too. He proved that. He got a flag for it. Enough of that. There is one other comment, though, that does need to be made here about what we just talked about in terms of the Giants' defense. Yes, they're shorthanded, and it hurt them, no question. But the other thing here, offensively, okay, they have continued through 3 weeks to move it, move it, move it, and move it. And now Shane Vereen, out of the blue, because it's not on his resume in the past, is having trouble holding onto the ball.
Two lost fumbles in 2 weeks.
Where's that coming from? It's not in his history.
No, he only had one lost fumble since his rookie year in 2011 entering this season. It's unheard of.
I can't explain.
Well, they've put the ball on the floor as a team. I mean, Vereen comes to the forefront. Manning has lost a few fumbles.
Okay, well, he got whacked by Baker yesterday.
No, but the bottom line is I don't think it's so simple to say Vereen is the biggest fumbling issue right now. I think it's a team issue. Cruz has coughed up the ball. Manning's coughed up the ball.
The Cruz fumble also was one he hit from behind. Look, no coach is ever going to excuse a fumble, folks. Don't let me try to sell that to you. But what I will say is, there are certain fumbles that are forced and caused, and there are other fumbles that are needless and don't need to be there. And what coaches used to say all the time is, you know, high and tight. Tom talks about it. Ben McAdoo talks about it. If you're doing everything technique-wise that's right and the defensive player just makes a great play and forces it out, okay, that's a forced fumble, and a coach isn't going to pull his hair out over that. But he is going to pull his hair out over fumbles that are not the product of a great defensive play.
Where the ball's moving around and you're trying to gain.
Or you haven't held it correctly.
Something like that, yeah. And I believe on the Vereen fumble, he had the ball around a lot, and that enabled the defender to get in a position.
Wasn't high and tight.
Certainly knock it out.
That's on him.
Well, and that's something that Mike Sullivan, the offensive coordinator, talked about in the wake of last week's
game. How about the first Eli interception in the fourth quarter? Will Tye does nothing to prevent that pick. Not a great throw, but he did not complete the process of the play and the route, did not fight for the ball, did not prevent the interception. That's inexcusable.
Dunbar made a great play on that, but
Tye
certainly made an effort. I mean, that was a one-handed interception that he did make.
Let me finish by saying one other thing, and then we'll get to whatever calls we need to get to. One other observation. I give the Redskins a ton of credit for this. They made several plays on both sides of the ball yesterday. We like to call it in coaching, Dan Reeves, you always used to coin the phrase, and I love it. It's one of my favorite football phrases, playing above the X's and the O's. I love that phrase. The Redskins played above the X's and the O's on a number of occasions yesterday. On offense, they like to call it the 50-50 ball, where, you know, guy throws it up, and either guy really has a realistic chance to get it. Who's going to get that 50-50 ball? In Dallas, Sterling Shepard caught one of those for a touchdown. Against the Saints, Victor Cruz caught one of those to set up the winning field goal. How many 50-50 balls did the Giants catch yesterday?
not that jump off the page to me.
How about zero?
Well, I could tell you the Redskins, though, a few that come to mind.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And their defensive back made the play on Ty. That, not a great throw, but a 50-50 ball because Ty could have made a play, and he didn't. Big play.
And Cravens made a big play, too.
Cravens made a big play. Now, that pass was a bad pass. Eli threw it behind and too sharply on a straight laser to Vereen. That was a bad throw by Eli, no doubt about it. But a good play by Cravens nonetheless. So the Redskins made several plays above the X's and the O's yesterday. The Giants made none. That's not a good recipe to win a game.
Especially when a lot of those 50-50 balls turn into explosive plays, too. That's a killer as well. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadows. So glad you could join us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And those of you watching over on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also hit us up on hashtag Giants Chat. For those of you watching on the app, we're also having a few poll questions that we're going to throw out throughout the course of the program. Our first question is, what hurt the Giants more, penalties or turnovers? Now, if you're not watching on the app, you want to weigh in via Twitter, want to hear where you stand on that hashtag Giants Chat. As the show progresses, we'll keep you up to date in terms of what the numbers are with respect to that poll. We're going to have two more questions on the horizon coming up. We also want to work you in on the phone lines, so let's start things off with Matt on Long Island. Matt, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, Paul and Lance?
Hi.
How you guys doing?
Well, Matt. What do you got for us?
Not too bad. All right, so listen, I don't see the teams from week one and two. The Giants really offensively didn't look different. The turnovers came, and they caught up to them. They were turning the ball over first 2 weeks, and it finally caught up. And Washington looked like the hungrier team. They were desperate, 0-2. They didn't want to go 0-3. And they made the plays big towards the end. And listen, can't put the game on Eli with that interception. The game shouldn't have been close. We should have been able to hold them off. Defense was letting them kick field goals, let them move up and down the field. But listen, we limited them. We were scoring. But, you know, they need to get better control of the Duke. Whatever you want to call the football, you know, they got to hold on to it better. Like you guys, stated, Vereen dropping the fumble, the fumbles, inexcusable on his part. He wasn't doing this before he got here. So I wonder what, you know, McAdoo's going to start preaching at practice. You know, this seems to be new. And especially with Eli getting hit and fumbling a lot this season. Well, I think he's got three fumbles that he put in that game alone, but they recovered two of them, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they did. They hustled to the football to recover one or two.
John Jerry had a
nice
recovery.
Correct.
Yes,
guys did hustle, yeah. But those are those 50-50 type of plays that you can't always bank on happening every single contest.
Yeah, understandable. But what did you guys think about the ejection of Richburg? Now, on that play that he, hit him from a little bit from behind, I didn't see too much on that hit where it was something that's going to jump out of the page and say, listen, that guy was a dirty hit, bad hit. You know, they looked like they were gunning for him that game. He must have said something.
My understanding from the sideline is that something was said. Richburg didn't just hit him. He also verbalized something.
He looked back at him.
That qualified as taunting.
Yeah.
And therefore, second violation, he gets tossed. It's pretty black and white. That's the new rule. He's the first one to be tossed as a result of the Beckham rule.
Two personal fouls and you're out. And, Matt, it wasn't
of taunting variety.
Correct. It wasn't so much him pushing Norman from behind. What Paul mentioned, what triggered the ejection was the fact that if you watch, Richburg turns around. Now, we don't know what was said. Nobody was there. But the ref, I'm sure, interpreted it as if Richburg taunted him, said something, looked at him, and so forth. And that's why they immediately reacted. But it was him turning back, not so much the hit from behind.
Yeah, I think the contact, had it stayed right there and stopped, I don't think that would have gotten him tossed.
I agree.
Okay, yeah, because it's funny because Norman was carrying Beckham early in the game. I think it was the first quarter, second quarter, where he was actually lifted Beckham up and was carrying him in the end zone.
How do the officials not see that?
So, like, how is that not in that game after a dirty hit on Shepard?
I don't understand that one, and that's been replayed on the sports shows this morning several times over on NFL Network and on ESPN. The fact that Norman actually grabbed Beckham, picked him up, and then, like, just released him after walking him about 2 or 3 yards at the end of the play. What's that about?
Well, to me, it looked like there was an official right there in the vicinity.
There.
I mean, it wasn't as if this was on the opposite side of the field.
And they were supposed to be all over this, right? The officials talked to Norman. They talked to Beckham before the game.
To warn them.
This was supposed to be a point of emphasis, and they're allowing Norman to pick him up and carry him 2 yards.
Well, I think what Norman did, initially, at least my interpretation, is he's not seeing the football because he wasn't looking at the football, and he sees Beckham jump up, so he's thinking maybe the pass is coming his way, so he's looking to make a play on the ball. But then what happened beyond that is extracurricular activities.
After he lets him go and he goes like this, come on.
Yeah.
He knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, and not to excuse anything, but big picture perspective, the Giants did not lose the game because there was a missed call there.
No.
I mean, let's at least not lose sight of the discussion.
No, I'm not saying that. But, it's just like it seemed like they were a little gunning more for the penalties on our side against Norman with the Richburg.
Here's what I will say. The Richburg penalty. The Richburg penalty was a real killer because they would have had a first down inside the 5, right? Or inside the 10?
I think it was right in that range. I could look it up.
And so that was costly for that reason, because I'll tell you what, Brett Jones came in and played center down the stretch after that ejection, and he held up.
Yeah, there were no issues with
exchanges. I thought he did okay. So, this was just a matter of that penalty was costly in terms of where the Giants had the ball.
The field position. No, I think that's a very good point. And, Matt, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. So it was first and 10 from the Washington 29, Paul. It was a 24-yard pass to Beckham to the Washington 5. That's where he was. Then Richburg, 15-yard penalty. So then they backed up to the Washington 20, and then two plays after that, the interception.
Right. And
momentum,
so
killer.
Maybe that tie play never happens if they're first and goal at the 5.
Let's head back to the phone lines. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Beddoe. Thanks so much for joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're recapping the Redskins' 29-27 victory over the Giants. We'll get to some more of our poll questions. We'll get to your tweets as well using hashtag Giants Chat. Conrad is in Cherry Hill. Conrad, what's happening?
Hey, love you guys. Great show.
Thanks
Very
for tuning
sad
in.
As a Giants
Thank
fan
you.
This morning, but a couple things that I noticed in the game. We absolutely beat ourselves. The penalties were supposed to be an improvement from last year. And I'm not saying that. I know it's still early, but during the preseason, which don't count, you saw penalties. First two games of the season, we saw penalties, and it came back to bite us in this game. So I think that we definitely need to improve in that area.
All right. Before you go anywhere else with this, let me just give you one thing that I want you to be aware of. In the NFL, a coach will tell you 5, maximum 6 penalties in a game is about as much as they'll stomach or tolerate. That's kind of the tipping point where, look, there are going to be some bad calls, there are going to be some legit calls, and there are going to be some calls where players will even take a penalty. For example, what Ty should have done was even taken an offensive interference if he had to prevent that interception. So don't just look at the penalty number and say, oh, that number is hard, it's in stone, that's horrible, it's terrible, it's criminal. There are circumstances, and there is a tolerable number, if you will. Giants had 4 penalties against the Saints. That was under the watermark. So don't put this all together in one lump. That's not what happened.
Well, and Conrad, we'll let you continue. What I wanted to add, and Paul, this is what you were hinting on, I don't think you could overreact to this 11-penalty game. Not that we're sitting here making excuses, but as you mentioned, the Giants had 7 penalties in the first 2 games combined.
Yes.
That was the fewest in the National Football League. So this was uncharacteristic
yesterday.
We don't know what's going to happen forward, but we could go based on that.
Right.
If you have 7 in the first 2 games, you jump to 11, which is 4 more than you had in the first 2 games combined. I think that's uncharacteristic. Number 2, last year they had 102 penalties, Paul. That was 9th fewest in the NFL.
Correct.
So let's not all of a sudden start the narrative where this is a continuation of
They're
an
not
issue
the Raiders.
From last season. Correct. You know, I feel as if sometimes – no, Conrad, I'm not accusing you of setting up that narrative, but I feel sometimes what happens is one bad game, which it was, from an undisciplined perspective, and then it becomes, well, this is a trend now that's going to happen moving forward. The numbers don't necessarily equate to that.
Go ahead.
No, I totally agree. I'll take a few of those penalties back because I don't think that Vernon hit was truly a hit up by the helmet at all. I think it was a football move. It happened, but we got flagged for that. The play with the on the punt that we got hit 15 yards.
Andrew Adams, you're talking about.
Right, the Adams play. You know, he's a rookie, and I read what he said. He said that he didn't actually realize that the punt was blocked. I get that. And so
it's a dangerous play anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not saying that aspect of it. But when you're looking at, and again, I'm not going back to the penalties, that will tie play. The first when the first pick Eli throw, P-Dot, I disagree with you on that aspect where it wasn't a perfect throw. Eli, if I watched that play over and over and over. If Ty continued on the route, that ball hit him right between the numbers. He stops. And I saw there was a little bit of hand movement there from the corner, but he completely stopped running his route. And that's the reason why he doesn't catch that ball. So,
well,
Eli,
I described that also.
Yeah, Conrad, I think Paul agrees with you, actually. That's what he said. He said that if Ty would have made a play on the ball, perhaps even breaks it up and prevents the interception. So I think the two of you are in agreement.
I will say this, though, about the throw. It wasn't a perfect throw, and the reason I will say that is because you're looking at 6'5", Will Ty, on a post route against the safety. Ty in that spot, if you throw the ball a little bit higher, he's going to be able to go up and reach and get it, which he's done in the past, and Larry Donnell's done the same thing. In that situation, you want to get a little more air under the ball so that he's got the wingspan and the box to reach for it, and it's going to go over the safety's head or his reach. That would have been the perfect throw. So the throw wasn't perfect, but I'm going to put 80% of the blame on Will Ty on that play. 80%.
Okay.
Well, the way you're describing the throw, Paul and Conrad, I didn't mean to cut you off. We'll let you continue. The pass to Larry Donnell in the Niners game last year?
Correct.
Would you say that was put in a position where either Donnell's going to go up and make
Correct.
The catch, Paul, or it's going to be over his head and incomplete?
Correct.
That would be a similar one. Continue, Conrad.
Yes, I agree with that. That's a great point right there. I agree with that. If the ball was higher a little bit, that would have been perfect. But as a Giants fan, I'm not jumping off the bridge, and I want everybody to really not do that. You know, yesterday we lost that game. Washington made plays. And, you know, you could tell where we beat ourselves. Like, the first two games, technically we were sound. We was not missing tackles. You know, we was bringing them we was completing routes. So we got a very good team. I would not be surprised if we go into Minnesota and win that game. Just because even in the years that we've won the championship, Washington has always played us tough. It's always been that type
of
game.
It's a division game.
And, you know, the year... Yeah, and we went and we lost both those games the year that we made that run to the Super Bowl. So look, I saw the Redskins yesterday as a desperate team, but I'm not overly impressed. And I just got to say that we had a couple guys that went down, and it would have been a different story, I believe, had Apple and our safety Thompson was back there. So I'm very happy with what I'm seeing. I'm happy with the offense as well. The offensive line is really, really playing their butts off. Eli almost got killed on one play.
The Chris Baker hit.
Yep. And I think with that coming up with this week against Minnesota, we got to find a way to stop the rush up the middle. Because they're not beating us on the outside. With the problems that we're getting here and there when Eli always have to step up at time and to the pocket, it's because the rush comes in the middle, and it makes it very difficult. But
Conrad, I mean, the Vikings, they bring pressure in a variety of different ways. And listen, we want to try to squeeze in a few more calls. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Vikings lead the NFL with 15 sacks.
They had eight
already
yesterday,
yes,
on Cam Newton, which
Correct.
Is very, very impressive. I just want to add one other stat that we have not talked about. I haven't done the full film work on it yet. Last night, I couldn't get through the whole thing. In fact, it was just too painful to even think about.
Hang it in there.
Missed tackles.
Yeah.
It's one of my pet peeve stats. And the Giants had multiple more yesterday than they did in the first two games combined.
Well, especially on that punt return.
It was dreadful.
With Crowder.
The number of missed tackles. That you want to point to one stat besides turnovers and penalties? Missed tackles. Killed them.
Well, I would throw that in with the penalties and the turnovers, like you said. The mishaps, the mental errors, that gets thrown into one category. Speaking of that, one of our questions on the screen in terms of the app was what hurt the Giants more. 55% say penalties, 45% say turnovers. And that's partially because, keep in mind, the Redskins, believe it or not, didn't score anything off of the three turnovers. Just
that's
like
amazing.
The Saints didn't score. It's amazing how the Giants have turned the ball over six times in the last two games combined, Paul. And nobody's cashed in on those turnovers.
Because the defense has done a very admirable job. But what those turnovers are missed opportunities offensively.
Second question that is up on the app right now, bigger concern moving forward, the secondary as a result of some of the injuries that have emerged, or the offensive line, which had some penalties, and Eli Manning, as we mentioned, took some hits. So that is the latest question. We'll get the results up on that front. I also want to work in some Twitter questions because there's a number of you who follow the show passionately, can't get to a phone. At easy underscore BKNY, can you explain how the Adams hit on the punt block was a personal foul when he just pushed the guy? I would disagree with that interpretation, Paul.
So would I.
That was way beyond just pushing him. That was launching, and that was a helmet-to-helmet type of hit. I think the evidence is overwhelming and clear that that warranted a personal foul.
And quite frankly, that's also a foul in NCAA football, too. So you can't tell me this is a college player just coming into the NFL as a rookie and doesn't understand the rules. He's known since his days at UConn. You can't do that.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Ken on the line in Trenton. Ken, what's happening?
Hey, Lance. Hey, Paul. How
Hi.
You guys doing?
Doing well, Ken. What do you got for us?
Well, I wanted to talk about Reston Richburg, but the caller before me stole my thunder. I feel that if that hit were on anybody besides Josh Norman, I don't think it would have been called, no matter what he said afterwards.
Yeah, but it wasn't the hit. It wasn't the hit. It was the taunt afterwards that got him in trouble.
I understand. I was watching the game with 9 Giants fans at my house, and every one of us had the same consensus that this game was being called by the refs a little bit lopsided. But I'm not going to say that's actually true. I will point out something that happened against the Saints on national television. The Saints were playing us. Only thing on the screen was the official talking to Sean Payton, and he literally said, "Do you want the penalty?" Then it panned over to Sean Payton. He said, "Yeah." After that, 2 back-to-back 15-yard penalties against the Giants came. I'm not saying that they're doing this on purpose or anything like that, but I mean, don't you find it funny that they made the Odell Beckham rule and the first one to get called with it is a New York Giant?
Well, I mean, I think that you take into consideration what happened between the Giants and the Panthers, and then the first player that is ever ejected under the new rule, it comes in a Giants game, whether it be a Giant or a Redskin that had that label. It is perhaps a coincidence, or perhaps a connection to the storyline from last year that a player involved in a Giants game is the first one to have to obviously deal with this. But, you know, they knew, it was no secret, Ken, that this was going to be put under the microscope, under the magnifying glass, more so than any other game in the NFL this season, as a result of the build-up, the media hype, whoever you want to blame. I think it was well-written and well-documented that every player in this game, besides Beckham and Norman, were going to be put under the microscope because they did not want it to become a repeat of last year. So I don't think that was a surprise, and it shouldn't be a surprise for anybody.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, I hope we can get going. A lot less turnovers in these upcoming games, because we got a pretty hard stretch coming. We got Green Bay and we got Minnesota, and Minnesota's playing lights out at the moment. And
yeah.
I feel like over the next month against the Redskins here would have probably been our easiest game to win, and we lost it. But other than that, you guys do a great job. I love listening to the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, appreciate you weighing in, Ken. Thanks so much for chiming in. Bigger concern moving forward is the current poll question up on the app. 63% say the secondary as a result of the injuries that occurred yesterday to Eli Apple and DRC, 37% to the offensive line. We're going to have another question coming up in a little bit, so stay tuned for that. Let's also head back to Twitter. Number of people weighing in. Matt at MattyC53. Forget the penalties yesterday, he writes, Paul. The most egregious play was allowing the Redskins to convert a 3rd-and-15 screen pass into a touchdown.
The Redskins blocked that screen pass extremely well. The Giants defenders looked like bowling pins. They really did, the way that they were just taken out of the play. And Crowder's incredibly quick, and he used that to his advantage. Again, though, that's a play that they made and the Giants didn't. You talk about above the X's and O's. That play's not designed to go 50 yards for a touchdown. That play's designed to, maybe with some good blocking, he gets 10 or 15 yards out of that play. You're not supposed to get what they got.
No, or to set up a manageable punt so you give your punter some more wiggle room,
you know,
and so forth.
And, yeah. And the Giants did not find a way to make a play at a time when the Redskins did. And see, that's the one thing that I will give the Redskins credit for. I said this before. They made more 50-50 plays. They played above the X's and the O's many more times. The Giants didn't do it at all. And that's another stat where if you want to, you know, write stats on a bulletin board and say, okay, categories, that one is lopsided for the Redskins. And that's, again, one of the reasons why they deserve the win.
Well, on that topic, and this relates to the big plays that we spoke about on Twitter earlier today, because I was doing some research calculating the numbers, Paul, just to put things in perspective. If you look at the difference between the Redskins game versus the difference between the Cowboys and the Saints game, in the first two games, Giants allowed five plays or 20 or more yards.
Right.
Five total. That right. included two punt returns that were for decent averages against the Redskins. Eight plays that fit that category, including special teams plays. So just like the penalties, you went from seven in the first two games to 11. You went from five explosive plays that you allowed to eight alone in this Redskins game.
Some of these numbers and stats are to the Redskins' credit once again, but I think the majority of the statistical categories that you look at as to why this game turned out the way it is are more the Giants' self-inflicted wounds.
Can't shoot yourself in the foot and expect to overcome that each and every week. And that's becoming a trend where there's been some mistakes that have come to the forefront, such as turnovers. They've done enough in previous weeks, but here's a week where you give up explosive plays on top of the turnovers and the mishaps, and you can't expect to overcome that.
Just go right to what happened the first 2 weeks when special teams were terrific, okay, and they didn't commit a whole bunch of penalties. So it was like, okay, the turnovers, they give you agita, but you still win the game. Because you don't have the other things compounding the original problem.
Yeah, if you put a checklist together, Paul, I mean, there were checks all across the board. I mean, you hit the home run in terms of all of the issues that you never want to come to the forefront in a game.
Look,
came to the forefront yesterday.
I'm going to make it simple for you, folks. If you have a pot of sauce on the stove.
Oh, here we go.
And you put a little too much onion powder in it, okay, or a little too much garlic in it, you could probably still eat the plate of pasta. The problem is, if you screw up with two or three ingredients instead of just one, not going to taste so good.
Can't salvage it under those circumstances.
Not really.
Now, is this speaking from experience? That's what I'm very curious about.
You don't
or do you let the cooking responsibilities
I
go to somebody else
I allow others
in the
to take
okay.
care of that.
Just understand. But you watch from afar.
I do
understand.
The most important thing. I eat it.
You eat it, yes. And you critique as a result of the eating. Absolutely. Let's head back to the phone lines here. 201-939-4513. We'll continue to get to your tweets as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul DeTino. I'm Lance Meadow. Recapping the Redskins 29-27 win over the Giants here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We've got Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hey, doing well, Len. How's things with you?
Good, good. Well, you know, obviously a disappointing loss. But, hey, Lance, a couple of compliments here. Lance, your post-game shows are really good. You get me all the way down to exit 5.
And appreciate that.
By the time I get there, I'm feeling a little better anyway. And Paul, you're all over it today, man. I mean, just a great, you know, particularly introduction, first 10 to 15 minutes, and I – you know, I sense that tinge of emotion for the first time. A sense of really calling it like it is. And
I appreciate that, Len.
Some criticisms of some players, even on the Redskins side.
Well, you have to understand something.
I think that's warranted every once in a while. I just think you're all over it today, Paul.
Well, thank you. I will say this, Len. You know, it's really a lot easier when things are going like they are to isolate certain things and to try to analyze and criticize or explain. When a team is just winning, when they're doing real well, and, of course, the Giants last few years haven't done so well, it's a lot easier and it's a lot lazier for people to just sit back and say, oh, they're winning. And you don't necessarily peel back the layers of the onion. But a game like yesterday, I got to dig into that onion so far down to the core. I mean, it takes a lot. So I appreciate your acknowledging
well,
Len, the effort.
You see, there's a reason why there's a tissue on the table because he's been crying as a result of peeling back that onion so much. So continue.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it was very disappointing. I mean, the discipline was just, I mean, out of control. disappointed, particularly disappointed in Richburg. I mean, okay, the two penalties. Well, I shouldn't say okay. He got kicked out of the game. I mean, the two penalties were you know, quite serious. But I'm not sure he played as well as he could have. And I was frankly, as Lance might know from last week, I was counting on Richburg to handle the nose guard. And you know, when Jones came in, he played pretty good. Paul, you alluded to that.
Yeah.
I don't want him, you know, I don't want him singled up against Linville Joseph next Monday night, but I thought the kid did okay. But we got to get better play out of Richburg. Not just eliminating the, you know, the penalties. We need better play out of, just frankly, better play out of Richburg. You know, I don't understand the throws to the tight ends. I mean, even early in the second play of the game, I mean, a one-yard completion to, I think it was either Donnell or Ty. And you know what? While we're on Will Tye, and I don't want to knock the guy. I mean, he's a pro athlete, but he's not going to make the play any differently next time, Paul. I mean, this is what you get.
Well,
I mean,
he's
we
not
all know
a,
where the weaknesses are on this team.
He's not a first-round draft pick.
We're not going to correct him this season. That's for sure. We got to hope guys can play better. But you know, I wouldn't count on Tye to make a different move next week. If put in the same situation, I mean, it's just who the guy is. I mean, I'm sure he's trying hard. He's not, you know, he wants to make a play, but you got to understand the talent level too. And geez, you know, the wide receivers, God, we got to get the ball out to those wide receivers. I mean, we're just capable of making plays. I don't know. I know Eli wants to get
Len,
rid of the ball quickly.
You know what?
But,
I don't mean to cut you off, Len. I've heard a lot of people bring that up, and Ben McAdoo was even asked about that in his post-game presser about on that final drive, you know, why not maybe take chances down the field? Remember, Victor Cruz gets an 18-yard catch to help continue that drive.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that they weren't overwhelmingly, you know, constantly going down the field, but if you look at the numbers, I mean, I thought the wide receivers were still heavily involved in the game plan, and I thought the Redskins were doing a decent job of at least saying, we'd rather you get the short pass and try to beat us down the field with a 20-yard gain after the catch as opposed to you're going to get the 45-yard pass down the field.
Right.
That's what I saw
right
out of the Redskins' defensive philosophy. So why should Manning then go for the home run if he could dump it off for the more manageable down and try to continue to move the chains?
They did play a lot of shell and umbrella coverage.
Hey, one more point. On the you know, on the fake punt, and you know, you're in the stadium, you're looking for replays, you don't get the replays, you can't see the whole play, you try to find it on you know, YouTube and so forth. It took a long time for that play to develop. Where the heck was the rush on the punter? I mean, it takes time for a guy to get down the field. And he threw a nice pass.
It's a beautiful pass.
Oh, boy.
You know, no question
about
that.
That was a quarterback-esque pass.
I'm not knocking the play. The first part of the play, though, he didn't seem rushed at all. I mean, he just stood up and looked down the field to make the play.
Len, I didn't time it. I didn't time it. I would invite you to do so. Go back onto NFL.com and get a look at the replay. And if you want, take a stopwatch on it and time it from snap to ball release. I don't know what it is, so I'm not going to disagree with you because I don't have the answer. I will probably go back and do that now that you've raised the issue. But I will say the pass was right on the money.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He threw a beautiful ball. I mean, no question about that. It just seemed like, man, he just sat back there and you know, waited for the guy to get down the field. I mean, he didn't throw an 8-yard pass. It was 35 yards down the field.
Well, you know what, Len? What I'll add is I went back and I watched Jay Gruden's press conference after the postgame show yesterday. And then I also watched what Quentin Dunbar, who made the catch, had to say.
Yeah.
Now, he claimed that during the week they were practicing this play and they definitely wanted to utilize it. And one of the things they said, I'm looking back, Dwayne Harris was the one that was on Dunbar and he ultimately made the tackle, I believe.
No,
I don't know. That's what the play-by-play as. I forget who it was.
It was Trevin Wade.
Was it Trevin Wade?
It
okay.
was Wade.
But then
was
Harris,
a corner by
Harris
trade.
Is credited with the tackle, though.
Yeah,
so
but,
I don't know.
Yeah, Harris. Yeah.
Wade's a corner by trade, though.
No, I get that. I'm just
and he
wanted
let
to
that
make
guy
sure.
Go.
So then what they had picked up was they saw on film that Wade doesn't jam the guy running down the field at the line of scrimmage.
Free release.
So therefore, they felt that there was going to be leverage to get a quick release down the field. And that's what Dunbar and Gruden both said. Just to explain to you, Len, perhaps why that happened.
He got a step on Wade. Yeah. There's no question.
Yes. Hey, a quick point on Dunbar. You know, he's a former wide receiver.
Correct, he is. He made the transition.
Correct.
That's a good point. Great point.
He's a former wide receiver.
Yep.
Just the point on this, think Jeremy Davis next year. Think Jeremy Davis as a defensive back next year. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Let's go Giants, just beat the Vikings.
You got it.
Thanks.
Appreciate the phone call. We've got another poll question up on the app. Biggest positive from the game, the run game or Sterling Shepard? Shepard had his second touchdown of the game. And the run game, you know, real quickly before we get to the lines, and I know we're focusing a lot on the mishaps, Paul, they run for over 100 yards again. They had nearly 6 yards per carry on the ground yesterday.
I mean, you know, Orleans Darkwa, I thought, did a really nice job. In my notes, as I was actually going through the play-by-play as the game went on, I mean, I had on Vereen's first touchdown a really nice key block by Bobby Hart, and we haven't even talked about him yet.
And that was brought up on Twitter, too.
We spent a lot of last week talking about who's going to be the right tackle and if Bobby Hart is going to be able to step up and fill the role. I thought he did a good job. Let me just say that right now. The second rushing touchdown, Dark was, I had key blocks by Flowers and Pugh. Just blew that hole open very nicely. And that's the kind of thing in the red zone when you get down there. I cry about a power running game all the time, especially in that area of the field. And you know what? They punched those touchdowns in. That was good to see. I just assume see two of those every single week.
Well, because that's what was lacking from the red zone in the first two games.
Yes.
The ability to punch it in and up the gut, too. That's what was most impressive, Paul.
So there's my positive.
To the edge.
That's my big positive from the game.
I would agree with you. I would vote for the run game. Not that Shepard hasn't impressed, but I think it's encouraging that they got back to what we saw a little bit in week one with respect to the continuity on the ground. Let's head back to the phone lines here as we continue to make our way to the top of the hour on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. LaVon is in Atlanta. LaVon, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hi.
Joel Levon, what do you got for us?
I've got two comments. I'll try to make them really quickly so other people can get on. I watched the game three times.
Four times. You got two more additional watches than Paul already. That's impressive. I don't know if I've ever seen anybody outdo a Paul in the video department. My hat's off to you there.
Well, here's the problem.
Wow.
The game was 3.5 hours long. If you've watched it four times,
he's got a lot of time on
then
his hands.
You haven't even had time to go to the men's room.
Well, I did really sleep last night, and I watched it. I DVR'd the game from the Sunday Ticket, and I usually just watch it, like, afterwards so, you know, I can see what went wrong, which you really can't because it's, you know, it's TV.
I feel you, my friend. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, now that I've calmed down more or less, it seemed like the Giants – I mean, this team came in, it's week three, but they had to play like it was week 13. The Giants had to know that. I think the most infuriating play for me was the fake punt and how you don't – it seemed like the Giants were just not ready for that type of situation. And how could you not be ready for everything to be an option – in a game like that with Washington, and the Giants have been 0-2 before, so they know about desperation, they know about must-wins early in the season, and they just came out with foolish penalties and taunts and to let a fake punt, especially after they just got a key, it was a very key stop, we just sacked them, they had to punt, how could you not at least whisper to the special teams coach, watch the fake. That was the most infuriating, and I think that was the turning point in the entire – well, it was so many.
There were a lot, yeah.
And that's the problem. See, first of all, I haven't talked to anybody on specials. I didn't get the chance after I got done with the television show last night to talk to anybody specifically about what you're saying, so I will not answer for them. But here's what I will say. There were, 12 different turning points in this game yesterday that I am not going to point to that fake punt and say that's why the Giants lost. I can't do it.
Oh, no. That's not why they lost, but, I mean, in a game where we already know it was going to be back and forth, it was going to be tight. It's division, like I said, they're fighting pretty much for their lives, at least in their eyes, week three. You know it's going to be back and forth, but at that point, the momentum after the JPP sack, I mean, the JPP pressure, burning sack, and we're high, and we're about to get the ball back, and then, you know, this fake punt, which puts them, you know, pretty much in field goal range to take the lead and keeps the defense on the field. It was – I mean, that and the block, but I'm going to go into my next point. My next point is about Odell Beckham Jr. and the tantrum and the teardrops on the sidelines. I've had my questions about him even before last year, before the whole Panther incident, well, Panthers game incident. Just his demeanor. I used to watch the game. Like I said, I watched the game very closely. He was, you know, he never liked to get hit. He would swipe at guys. He threw that punch in the Buffalo game. He's been much better this year, but I still think that the team might want to privately get him somebody to work on. I don't know if it's self-esteem issues. I don't know what it is, but to show emotion in that way during a week three matchup against a division opponent is not. I can't think of a good word, but it's not productive. It doesn't help anybody to see your best player. Well, Eli's our best player. One of your best players throwing tantrums, hurting himself, and crying on the sidelines, banging his head against equipment lockers during the matchup while these things are going on. He can't. I mean, it's week three of the season. There are 13 more of these games. Well, there's going to be more intense situations down the line. I mean, why is he doing this?
Well, LaVon, what I'll say is from an optic standpoint, I can understand where you're coming from. But I think big picture perspective here, he had 7 catches on 11 targets for 121 yards. Penalties were not necessarily an issue as they were in the Carolina Panthers game.
He had the one pick on the Shepherd
catch.
Correct,
which was on that final drive. Other
but
than that, though,
between the lines, yeah. He did nothing,
and
that would be offensive.
Correct. So my response to you, LaVon, is I understand that optics, it's not great, but if it's carrying over to the field, then I think it's more of an issue than perhaps if it's on the sideline and he's having whatever he's doing on the sideline. When it starts impacting the product on the field, then I think it's more of an issue. I don't think we're there yet based on the evidence we saw yesterday.
I would say this. I don't think it's great, and I would rather it did not happen, what you saw yesterday on the bench. I'm not going to disagree with you, but here's what I will say. In light of the issues between him and Norman last year and how the spotlight was on and everybody wanted to see, is there going to be some extracurricular junk on the field? Look, as far as I'm concerned, Norman had the spearing on Shepherd that drew the penalty flag. Norman had the grab of Beckham, which we talked about earlier, when he practically picked him up and threw him after a
early
play.
Game.
To me, Norman was the guy who was across the line. Between the lines.
Testing the boundaries a little bit more.
It
so
wasn't Beckham.
Yeah.
And so given that, in that perspective, I'm not nearly as upset as you are about what happened on the bench.
Yeah, if the emotion carries over to the field, LaVon, and he's picking up guys and throwing them to the ground and he's not keeping his cool, you know, then I think, hey, that's an issue.
And I thought, quite frankly, especially in the fourth quarter, when you saw Beckham catch some of those short passes and get some yards after the catch, it's because he was fired up and he was intense and he was taking it out on the field of play in a clean and productive manner. I actually applauded him for the way he played yesterday. I thought he played very well.
Paul, that is, you make perfect sense. And we understand that. Lance, you and I and everybody else who saw the game knows he had a good game.
He did have a good game.
A good game. And he still threw a tantrum during the game and tears. If you are one of the best players on the team.
Not loving
leader,
it.
People
I'm
see
with
that.
You. I'm
people
with you.
People see that on the team. People see that on other teams. People see Minnesota
I understand.
Saw that. And we got to play Minnesota next week. You think they're not going to use that against him?
Are we? And by the way, let me just clarify one thing before you go, because we do have to move on.
Okay.
I don't know that those were tears, or if you looked at him,
okay.
His face was just covered in sweat, and there were sweat bubbles all over the place.
Yeah. We're getting to this point where we're going to start out
so
analyzing.
I'm not even going to confirm or deny that they're real tears. I'm not even going to. I'm not going to do that.
No, and LaVon, we'll let you go. I think you bring up a valid point and appreciate the phone call about putting something on film that maybe other teams are going to pick up on and try to hit on. Listen, it's a
valid
point.
It's not great.
That's why I said it goes back to the optics. It's not great for the optics, what you're putting and documenting on film, what other players, what other teams are going to pick up on. But remember, if other teams try to bait him, that's been already well documented with Josh Norman. So the officials are keeping close tabs on that type of behavior if other teams and other players want to go down that road.
And quite frankly, what they now know and what they've now seen evidence of is that you can make Beckham lose control like Norman did, and he has learned from it, bounced back from it, and burned Norman's butt pretty good in yesterday's game. So do you really want to try to do something like that, or are you going to wind up giving up seven catches for 100 and something yards?
Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Kashawn in Maryland. Kashawn, what's happening?
Hi. Hello. Hello, Lance. Hi, Paul. How are you guys
doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Kashawn. How's everything?
Good. Bad. I am so disgusted. Like, I was so upset. I didn't even watch any more football after the Giants game. This team is in trouble. To me, and I warned a lot of the Giants fans that I talked to on a weekly and a daily basis, that if the Giants didn't fix their turnovers, that they were going to start to lose football games. Everybody was on
Makes
a hiatus.
Sense.
You know, they were on cloud nine off of 2 weeks, and I kept trying to warn people that we haven't really accomplished anything. Yes, they were good wins. They were very small victories as far as point differential goes, and we really hadn't established ourselves as a team to be respected in the league, that we were just a 6-10 team that's trying to get better. And what did they do? They did the same thing that they did against New Orleans. They did the same thing that they did against last year, not seizing an opportunity to take control of your division. Just like last year when it was staring at you in the face, they come claim me. I'm here for the taking. You can come and get me. And they didn't do it last year. They didn't do it yesterday. And to me, this is a team that's in trouble. Now we're hurt. We're at Minnesota. We're at Green Bay, who looks like they found, you know, their identity back. Aaron Rodgers looks like the Aaron Rodgers that, you know, we're used to seeing. And it's just so disgusting. The Redskins are not a better team than us, but they're more disciplined yesterday than us. And I can't believe the penalties. And nobody wants to say it, but Eli, he is too old and too smart to be throwing those type of balls. And that was inexcusable that you would continue to, and that's why Odell Beckham, I think he was crying, I saw his tears or whatever, but Odell Beckham was frustrated because it's like, yo, he felt like he wasn't getting the ball enough. Number one, he probably thought, and I agree with him, that we should have destroyed the Redskins, and we didn't. The game should not have been that close. And to me, they were throwing the ball to players on the team that are not the best players. You had Beckham, Sterling, and Cruz, who are very capable of beating those the secondary, and they were throwing it to tight ends who are on their best day average. And to me, it's just inexcusable. And Eli has to do better with throwing a ball like that. And I knew they were, I knew if they didn't fix the turnovers that we were going to lose. And now the chickens have come home to roost. And now we're in a situation where we got to win these next three games. And I'm not confident that this team has the mental toughness to bounce back. And so I'm just disgusted because you had an opportunity to go 2-0 in your division, and then maybe you could have lost to Minnesota next week, or maybe you could have lost to Green Bay the week after that. And so now we might lose the next three games. So I'm just trying to tell everybody to brace themselves. Like, I'm just disgusted overall with the performance of that team yesterday. It's not the fact so much that they lost, it's the way they lost. And they haven't, to me, shown that they're a different team when it really counts, when you really need a win, from last year to this year.
Well, I think you bring up some very good points, Kashawn, in terms of the schedule that is approaching now. This is going to be a very difficult stretch in terms of the caliber of the opposition, the Minnesota Vikings, the Green Bay Packers, and let's not also overlook the Baltimore Ravens too, Kashawn, who are also playing very good football, specifically from a defensive standpoint. So the margin for error becomes more and more minute as you move forward with the schedule. I think you hit on a very interesting point at the beginning, and I've been talking to a lot of people off the air about this. When you look at these three games, and this just goes to show you, and you could say this about most NFL teams, Kashawn, three games for the Giants have been decided by a total of 6 points. So just think about it. The ball bounces one way, the ball bounces another way. I mean, that's the difference between the Giants being 0-3 right now, being 3-0, being 1-2, being 2-1. You know, that's putting things in perspective and realizing, regardless of what the standings show, there's this small, minute area which could have went the opposite way, and then the standings are flip-flop. So, you know, I think you brought up a good point that they've won games, but that doesn't mean that there's not areas that they need to clean up.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll just say before I go is that's what speaks in, you know, usually a month into the season you begin to learn, like, the identity of a football team. And if the Giants are absolutely serious about going to the playoffs, if that's their objective, to put the fifth Lombardi trophy up, number one, I don't want to hear about, oh, yeah, we had a good week of practice, and what you're doing in practice is not showing up on the film, because what you're doing in practice is not showing up on games, because if you're not turning the ball over in practice and you're taking care of the ball, then why is that not translating to games? And if you're serious about going to the playoffs, then you need to start showing the league and showing your fans, showing yourself that you're ready. When it's time to win a game and when it's time to take control, the teams that are ready to go to the playoffs, the teams that are ready to be a part of the upper echelon, they win those games. And there's no excuses. There's no excuses why the Giants should have won the game. And to me, until they prove to me that they're not the same 6-10 team, I'm not going to be, you know, carrying the torch, oh, the Giants that we're back, because we're not back. So I'm just really frustrated, and thank you for guys for letting me vent.
All right, Sean.
They just have to do better.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Mike Sullivan, leading up to this game, Paul, talked about how ball security was a priority leading up to the Redskins game, and that during practice, during team drills, they always emphasized the high and tight and this and that.
Yeah, guys were carrying a ball
around
exactly. With that discussion in mind.
And that's what they're hoping then translates to the game. But one thing I want to respond to what Kashawn brought up about, well, if they're focusing on this during the week, then why is it that it keeps coming to the forefront in the games? There's only so many ways that Eli Manning can prepare for taking a hit from a guy like Chris Baker and how he's going to handle the football under those circumstances.
That wasn't just a hit. That was a monster crushing.
It may have been, and I wanted your perspective, Paul. I thought from the time that I've been covering the Giants, it may have been the hardest hit I've seen Eli Manning take, other than maybe the Niners playoff game.
He took one from McDougal of the Eagles in his first start down in Philadelphia. That was vicious.
In 04, you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Way back when he was a rookie. The Niners playoff game
that one,
was the
Justin
worst
Smith.
Game-long battering
correct.
That I've
in
ever seen.
In terms of over the course of the contest.
Right.
But individual hit, that Baker
that was
hit,
about as hard as I've seen.
Maybe up there.
Sean Rogers in Cleveland crushed him in a primetime
before
game.
Before he came to the Giants.
And understand something? Sean Rogers was a big man.
He was a presence, as I like to say. Let's head back to the phone lines. Anthony is in New Jersey. Anthony, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks for making it, Anthony. What do you have for us?
Very obviously very, very disappointing loss yesterday. I've been a season ticket holder for a while at the game yesterday. And to be honest, you know, going by the first couple minutes of the game, I mean, you know, Giants go 3-and-out. They punt the football. The Redskins, you know, we get the turnover right there in the punt. I mean, within like a blink of an eye, I'm looking at the scoreboard. It's 14-3 Giants. I'm saying to myself, this is going to be a great day. Maybe the Giants are going to run away with this game. And then it's just everything just started to happen. I mean, you can't win a football game when you have that many penalties. You know, you turn the ball over four times, you know, and defensively, you know, the Giants, you know, they haven't gotten an interception yet. They, you know, other than the punt yesterday, they haven't gotten a fumble. You know, they haven't really created the turnovers. It was just a very sloppy performance. And I knew coming into this game, I knew Washington season was on the line. I think in this league, anytime you start out 0-3, it is very, very difficult to make the playoffs. So I knew this was going to be a shootout. But, you know, it just a very, very disappointing loss. I really felt when the Giants were up 14-3 that they were really looking to run away with this game. And I really think if the punt blocked by the Giants would have stayed, I think that was a big momentum shift right there. I think, you know, the momentum would have definitely gotten our way. But again, in this league, you can't win football games when you turn the ball over four times, and you can't win when you have too many penalties. It's just, it's inexcusable, and you can't have that happen.
Well, you mentioned when they were up 14-3, and the problem is the reason why they couldn't continue to pile on, and then they were up 21-9, remember, Anthony, at one point, so they had the cushion. It was the fact that every time they were moving the football, you know, something would go wrong. It would be either penalties that backed them up. It would be turnovers. I mean, and think about all those drives, Paul. If you turn that into a field goal, at least you keep padding the lead.
And the week before, it was not only the turnovers, it was also drop passes, which, by the way, I think Sterling Shepard had the only one yesterday that I counted as a drop pass.
And by the way, I don't know if that was even intended for him, Paul, the one that came at him. And because Carl brought up on the broadcast, he thought it was meant for Beckham.
Really?
If you watch the way the route is, go back and watch the film. Beckham was running a route further down the field, and I think Shepard put his hand up when Manning really meant for it to go to Beckham.
Well, I will say this. Shepard had a lot of room. He had a lot of room.
A lot of room yesterday. And I want to just make one more quick point. Rodgers Cromartie goes down. Eli Apple goes down. I mean, you know, Littleton, you know, I know Darian Thompson is out. Hopefully we can get these guys back but next week. But I want to ask you guys this. Do you guys think these next three games, Minnesota, Green Bay, and Baltimore, do you think these next three games are really going to tell us what this football team is made of?
How can they not?
Yeah.
How can they not? The next 2 weeks are tough primetime games on the road in very difficult environments in Minnesota and Green Bay. It's feasible the Giants could be on a three-game losing streak here and be 2-3 after five games. These are by far difficult games to do. You can't expect to just say they're going to go and win two of these road games in a row now. You can't. These are tough games.
Going by history that has shown.
I think you've got to be satisfied if you're 1-1 after the next 2 weeks.
If you could split the next two, I think that would be an accomplishment.
I mean, if the Giants could split 1-1, I mean, look, history's shown that when Eli has played against Minnesota, it has never gone Eli's way. I mean, I was at the game in 07 when he threw four picks. At the game in 05 where he threw four picks. History has shown Eli has not played well anytime the Giants have played the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, last year's game, remember, that was the game that Beckham was suspended. I agree with the track record that you laid out, but I would make an argument also, keep in mind, Anthony, to add to your point, this Vikings defense may be even more impressive than it was last season when it was one of the top 10 defenses in the NFL. These guys are opportunistic. They're getting to the quarterback more effectively than any other defensive line in the league. I mean, this is a game you cannot afford to make mistakes because one mistake could be extremely costly. As we've seen, the Vikings scored two defensive touchdowns against Tennessee in the opener, and they returned the punt. Special teams, too, is dynamic for Minnesota.
Yeah.
Marcus Sherrills had a return for 50-plus yards in yesterday's victory.
And as we sign off, I also want to just say to you, Cam Newton took a beating yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I believe he even had to come out for just a bit. Worry about Eli's health in this game, too, because those guys get after it.
Protection for the players, protection of the football.
Thanks for the call.
And Anthony, thanks so much for weighing in. Well, that is going to wrap things up for us. Greatly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Any tweets that we didn't get to, I know a lot of you weighed in. We'll try to answer them off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday this week. We'll start to look ahead to the Vikings starting tomorrow as the Giants are going to be playing on Monday night this week. So everything gets pushed back a day, Paul, in terms of the preparation and when they speak to the media and so forth. But full coverage with Giants.com. And in a few minutes, Ben McAdoo is going to address the media. He'll give his take on the game and update all of the injuries accordingly. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com.